Aaron Pribble is with us on Sports Byline, and we're talking about his book, Pitching in the Promised Land. And I said before the break about something, a very special trip that he took. I assume that in taking on this adventure, you wanted it to be more than just about baseball. What type of approach did you take in wanting it to make more sense to you than just the baseball sense?
Absolutely. My day job is a high school history teacher. I have a master's in political science, so that stuff has always been something that's terribly interesting to me. And what made this unique experience was not just the baseball, but the fact that it was in such a dynamic part of the world. So really for me, baseball, and in the story as well, baseball is a lens for a story about the politics and culture of the Middle East. We were talking earlier about how baseball can reveal aspects of our humanity, our culture, our similarities, and our differences. So even though I was going to play baseball, I was really going to learn more, not just about myself, but about this really interesting, dynamic part of the world.
You went to the West Bank, you went to Ramallah, and anybody that knows anything about that part of the world knows it's not safe for anybody, not only Americans, not only for Jews, but just about anybody. Right. Tell me why you decided to take that trip.
Well, I'd just been fascinated by the Israeli-Palestinian conflict for a long, long time. I talked about it with 13, 14, 15-year-old freshman and sophomore kids in class, always interested in how to bring in some real-life context. And some people over there were saying, it's dangerous, you are going to die, do not go over there. They don't like people like you. And I was talking to other people, and they said, it's perfectly fine, it's peaceful, it's the home of Jesus' birth and the hills of Nazareth, stuff like that. And so I wasn't really sure. I was conflicted. About halfway through the summer, I still hadn't been out there. I got an email from a gal that I had also been to Israel with a few summers before, and she's a Jewish girl. She was living in Ramallah, and she said, hey, I'm living over here. I'm working for an NGO on water rights issues. Why don't you come out and stay with me? And so I thought about it. Now I didn't have any more excuses because I knew somebody. I had someone who could show me around. And so I kind of turned to Nate Fish and I said, Fish, I got a friend in Ramallah. You want to go? And he kind of looked at me and he said, maybe. And so we made it happen.
I think about going into that part of the world since I've been in Iraq and Afghanistan as well. And you just have to be aware of the things that are around. You almost stand out, and we're not used to it. I mean, both of us are white Americans, and so therefore we move freely. But I'm wondering, when you got into that environment, what was the first thing that struck you?
Well, the first thing that struck me was the wall of separation, this big, tall, ominous gray fortress-looking thing with the guard towers. As soon as you go through, literally, the world changes. It goes from one culture to another in many ways. So I'm on the bus, and as soon as we go through this checkpoint, I look over at Fish, and we won't even talk, but we exchange these little smiles, and Fish whispers, dude, we're in the West Bank or something like that. And so I see these little kids, and they're standing on the side of the road, and they're throwing rocks. And, of course, they're throwing these rocks at this light post. And I'm thinking, these rocks, they could be throwing baseballs. You know, they could be throwing baseballs instead of rocks. So that was that. We get to meet my friend Susan. We walk around. I described Fish earlier as having this long, curly, dark hair. I'm about 6'5" and a tall, goofy white guy, basically. Walking through the streets of Ramallah, we were turning heads. People were breaking their necks to turn around and look at us. But it wasn't menacing. It was more just like looks at quizzical expressions. Like they were interested. Many people were very friendly. And, in fact, the smile was the expression of the day. So at first, while we were nervous, we ended up feeling quite at home.
One of the things that I have found in my travels in Afghanistan and in Iraq particularly, and I think it applies to the West Bank, I think it applies to Israel, I think it applies to all troubled countries. The common denominator, Aaron, that I have found is all people want the same thing.
Yes.
They want a job, they want a home, and they want safety. And I think the politics is what really stirs it up. Did you find that in interacting with the people in the West Bank?
Absolutely, 100% agree. People want to live their lives. I think we're more similar than we are different. If people can make a living, provide for their family, that's what most of us want, absolutely. When the economic system breaks down, if you're in a broken economic system for one reason or another, then things get difficult. You know, if we don't have enough food or money to provide for our kids, then things get pretty difficult. And in fact, one example of that, I've been in Ramallah for about 10 minutes visiting my friend Susan, and she tells us a story. We are eating at this diner called Sinatra's in Ramallah, in this little Christian section. I'm thinking, I haven't had lox and cream cheese and bagels one time when I'm in Israel. But I go over to the other side, and I'm eating lox and bagels in Ramal. That doesn't make any sense. She tells us a story about 1 or 2 months before she's taken two of her friends around. Just so happens that when they're in the car, they get kidnapped at gunpoint in a cab. Now, granted, she's showing around two of her friends, this time me and Fish, saying 2 months before she was with two friends and they get kidnapped at gunpoint. So they're taken to this house. The kidnappers are quite nice. They teach them Arabic and they give them tea and stuff. But it turns out that the person who had kidnapped them, sticking a gun in their face, was a fighter who was injured and he couldn't pay for his medical bills. This is a story that she was telling us. So as soon as the guns pulled on them, their friends try to jump out of the car, open up the door. They say, don't do it. Susan thinks, maybe I should jump out. Maybe I shouldn't. They get to this house. Eventually, the situation gets resolved. This is the story she told me, when they give the guy a job with the Palestinian Authority as a policeman. figure that out. But, you know, if the economic system is broken, they got to do something about it.
There is a very poignant story in this book about you and Nate running into a couple of kids. Pick up the story.
So this is later in the day after I hear the story about the alleged kidnapping. We've gone all through Ramallah. We went to the home of Jesus' birth. We're walking through the hills. We come back and the sun is just about to set and we're going out for the night. We're actually heading home. And I had a baseball in the bottom of my bag and I see two kids just playing in the alley. And of course, these kids reminded me of not necessarily some of the kids I taught, but some of the kids back home. And more importantly, some of the kids on the Israeli side of the wall who are fans of the game. And I thought, you know what? If these two kids were on the other side, were here with us in Israel, they'd be baseball fans. So I thought about the ball in the bottom of my bag, and I picked it up, and I went over, and I knelt down on one knee, and I gave a kid a ball. He didn't know what it was, you know, and I kind of did the throwing motion, and I took it back from him, and I threw it to him, and then he kind of got the idea, and he threw it back to me. And now his other buddy is in on the action, you know. He wants to play catch. So his other little friend steps out into the street. I give him the ball, and they start playing catch in the middle of this small alley in Ramallah as the sun is setting. I look up, and I see 4 or 5 little kids peek their heads out from over the railing because they see these kids playing catch. And I think to myself, baseball can bridge gaps. You know, if these two young kids were playing in the Little League in Israel, they wouldn't know any differences. They wouldn't know that they were supposed to be enemies or they had this centuries-old conflict. They just know that their second baseman was from one part of town and their third baseman was for another. And I got goosebumps, a little verklempt, you know. I kind of missed it up a little bit and thought sports can bridge cultures and conflicts the world over. It was a really powerful example of that, I think.
What one thing did you leave the West Bank with? What image that you'll carry with you the rest of your life?
The image that I'll leave with is those two boys playing catch. I will never, ever forget that. There's a picture of it in the book as well. That moment is seared into my memory. But in terms of an impression that I left with, I think it's what you said to start all this off. People are people. We are more similar than we are different. And if we can focus on those similarities and give everybody an equal opportunity to provide for themselves, then things are probably going to be all right.
Every good book has got to have a love story in it, and you're smiling. And I know you had a love story in this one.
Yes, we did. This gal named Yael. I kind of have a thing for kind of the long, curly hair and the caramel-colored skin, stuff like that. So we were out. We'd like to go out on Friday nights because we had early games. And so this one night, I had just finished dinner with Dan Rotham, the Israeli guy who I mentioned earlier, and we go out to this bar called the Mish Mish on Lillenboom Street in southern Tel Aviv, and we're having a couple drinks, and my two buddies, Fish and another guy, said, "Pribble, get in there." And I was like, what are you talking about? Do you need another drink or something? And they say, "No, get in there." And I turn around, and there's this beautiful, tall, slender, dark-looking lady, who I later found out was a Yemenite Jew. And I kind of, it was like that feeling that you get when you get called in from the bullpen, you know. It's like the fifth inning, Prim will get loose, you know, or something like that. And butterflies are erupting in my stomach, and I'm all nervous, and I think, I got to do this. You know, I got to try to go talk to her. So I, not very smoothly, lean in past her right shoulder.
What's your opening line? Yeah, I got to hear. Exactly. What's your line?
Gosh, what was my open line? It was something like, excuse me, I'm just trying to grab a beer or something like that.
Not what's your sign, right?
Yeah, no, not exactly. How do you say baseball in Hebrew? Nothing like that. But she kind of looks at me. First of all, Sabra is a word for prickly pear in Hebrew, and it's the unofficial name, nickname of all Israelis, because this fruit is prickly and hard on the outside, but really sweet and sugary on the inside. So it's like Israelis are like this fruit because they're rough from years of toil in the desert, but if you really get to know them, they're sweet on the inside. And so as I lean past this girl, who I find out later is Yael, she doesn't even acknowledge me. She just goes, oh, fine, you know, and brushes me off. And I think, give it another shot. So I go in there and I fumble again. Oh, sorry, I would speak Hebrew if I could, but I can't. And so she turns around. She's got these dark green eyes, and I catch them just for a second. I catch the gaze of her eyes, and she looks at me again, and then she starts talking to me. She says, you're American? I said, yeah, I'm from California, and this is my buddy Nate, and I brought fish over to take the pressure off me. She says, why are you here? I said, we're here for baseball. We do not have the sport in Israel. We do not have baseball in Israel. Yeah, I swear. And so that started up the conversation, and we hung out a little bit later that night. And from there, I had a nice couple of months with Yael.
How did it change your life? Because every international experience like this does change one's life, and you're nodding. How did it change it, Aaron?
Well, baseball has been, as they say, baseball has been very good to me. Baseball has showed me the world. I went to Hawaii, halfway across the world, for baseball as an 18-year-old right out of college. Got to spend time in a beautiful culture that I otherwise wouldn't have. Baseball took me to the Midwest, which for us Bay Area folks in many ways is different culturally. Had a beautiful time there. Baseball took me to France and then Israel. And so you learn a lot about yourselves through these experiences when you take yourself out of your comfort zone. I think that's really important. So that's what I'd go with. The fact that going to different places is a unique experience, not just for what it teaches you about yourself, but what it teaches you about others.
Is there one particular story that you still, when you think about it, you just either laugh out loud or you just start smiling?
There, what I always go back to and what has gotten a really strong response in the book is that one of the final chapters called the Schnitzel Awards. You know, a lot of stuff, schnitzel is the food that we were served over and over again in the cafeteria where we all stayed. And instead of the Israel Baseball League, guys started referring to it as the Israel Bush League, the IBL, because of all the stuff that happened in a loving way, but sort of poking fun at the problems that we had had. So at the end of the summer, some of the guys get the idea to have an award show where we're all going to come together and we're going to poke fun of us at us. But instead of being the Israel Baseball Awards, they were going to be the Israel Bush Awards or the Schnitzel Awards. And so things like awards for best umpire, which I mentioned, awards for most Bush player, most Bush employee, stuff like that. The player of the year who won this Schnitzel Award was a guy named Neon Leon Feingold. I call him Neon Leon, but his name is just Leon Feingold. He had played for the Braves. He was, in another life, a former competitive eating champion. He literally had won some eating competitions, thighs like tree trunks, an enormously big, strong, smart guy who had played for the Cleveland Indians. He threw really hard. And so at the end of this award ceremony, when he wins Player of the Year, for every time somebody won an award, they would pass out these schnitzel patties, like these fried and breaded chicken patties, to each player. We had some left over because Neon Leon was the last person, and so we hand him a bunch of these schnitzel patties. We knew that he was a competitive eating champion, so we start chanting, Leon, Leon. And he's wearing a suit and tie. Everyone else was in board shorts and jeans. He's wearing a suit and tie like he knew he was going to win. He rips off his tie, cracks open a beer, and starts devouring the schnitzel patties. And the place erupted, and it was a beautiful capstone to an incredible night. So when I think about the book, I think about the Schnitzel Awards. In fact, Dan Duquette, who was the director of player development for the Red Sox for a long time, or the general manager, excuse me, he was the director of player development for the Israel Baseball League, and I actually saw he sent out a tweet. He said, pitching the promised land, read it, the Schnitzel Awards chapter is hilarious, or something like that. So Dan liked that chapter, and that's been getting good praise so far.
Well, Aaron, I want to congratulate you on this book. I think it's a wonderful read, and I hope that people will check it out. And again, congratulations on not only the book itself, but also the experience. Thanks a lot for joining us for the hour on Sports Byline.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Check this book out. It's a good one. It's called Pitching in the Promised Land, a story of the first and only season in the Israel Baseball League. We continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline.